And the buck following mine will also continue the knife and rake theme, which is nice. Our site, we had 5 locations in Michigan, and what I'll be presenting is really a condensed. I don't want to be too loud. How are we doing? Okay. So what I'll be presenting is really a condensed version of a large data set which I went out to collect, and Neville will kind of talk a little bit about how we might be able to apply that data set to maybe in a mitigation or greenhouse gas estimate of nitrous oxide particularly. We'll try to spend not too much on introduction. I want to move quickly, but I want to make sure we're all on the same page. And it's a little interesting that we're actually in this talk today. But again, I think the nitrogen rate makes it relevant, and we want to make sure that any reduction in rate and possible nitrous oxide would be agronomically viable. So it's nice to be among agronomists here. We'll jump into the study and we'll get into some conclusions here now. And I realize this graph on the left might be a little difficult to see, but I do like to show it. It kind of gives us an idea of the scale and magnitude of change with regards to some of the major greenhouse gases. On top is carbon dioxide in parts per million, and then methane is in the middle, nitrous oxide at the bottom. Both methane and nitrous oxide in parts per billion. But the large graph is the past 10,000 years, and then the inset is the past 200, and you can see that there's pretty rapid rate of change. And what's key to nitrous oxide is that it's roughly, in terms of carbon dioxide equivalents, it's roughly 300 times more potent as a greenhouse gas. And the CO2 equivalent is a measure to kind of put some of the greenhouse gases on a common currency. So it's one measure to kind of get everything equal there. Now, the major source of nitrous oxide is agricultural soils and agricultural in general. Most people say about 80% of nitrous oxide is a result of agricultural practices. And most of this is a result of increased nitrogen in agriculture systems, particularly soils. And this arises from, and historically we've thought a lot about denitrification, but nitrification can also play a role too, even in dry soils and in Oregon as well. So those high nitrogen rates. But so we know there's a potential for increased nitrous oxide with these nitrogen additions in these systems. Now why ag soils? Why look at potential mitigation within agriculture systems? So we know with regards to nitrogen best management practices, we've got kind of the four big R's here. And people have looked at these different strategies, say, maybe a different source. So maybe a delayed release nitrogen for lowering nitrous oxide emissions. Timing and placement, as well as source, have kind of led to some a lot of different findings. And it hasn't always been consistent to find reduce or to make reductions in nitrous oxide in those types of management systems. But a straightforward method might be to just reduce that rate. And this might be an encouragement for growers to back off on that high end. So before we jump into yield, we'll talk a little, continue on with nitrous oxide here. So kind of the current framework was proposed from the IPCC. This grew out of the United Nations, and they provide both a scientific, technical, and policy framework to make national or even regional budgets for greenhouse gases, and as well as mitigation scenarios. And currently the 1% emission factor, and that would be like fertilizer-induced emissions, so kind of above a background level, is 1%. And this number grew out of, it's almost 1,000 data points across all different environments, and it's a pretty good estimate for a large scale. But the trouble is that type of analysis was conducted not all with studies that weren't necessarily on a nitrogen gradient, like we've set out to do, and they assume this linear response. So this would be with increasing fertilizer N rate, the same amount is converted to nitrous oxide. No matter where you're at on that curve. So potential nitrogen rate reduction, say 20 pounds, 30 kilograms, 30 would correspond to a particular reduction in nitrous oxide emissions. Now, in a nonlinear response, and the IPCC has different tiers and methods to make these types of estimates, and there's even a model type approach too. But a tier two approach might be, if you were to build the data set, or if you were to learn a little bit more about the region you're in, a nitrogen rate specific emission factor, where that same decrease might lead to a much larger reduction in nitrous oxide, but more importantly, a more accurate estimation. And where this might fit into yield is that end rate has to be relevant agronomically. So we want to make sure that any yield impact doesn't turn into a large yield penalty. And so this business of a linear response or a nonlinear response in the nitrous oxide is key to maybe this strategy. So we're kind of working off of some observations, not only in Michigan but elsewhere, that the response was nonlinear, and we wanted to look at these nitrogen rates and the nitrous oxide response in a typical nitrogen rate fertility trial, but also monitor N2O, and then we wanted to look at the relationship to yield. And our hypothesis was that at maximum yield and above maximum yield end rates, we would see a large increase in nitrous oxide. So above that crop demand, we'd see an increase in nitrous oxide loss. And additionally, that if we were to reduce these rates, we would have a large impact on nitrous oxide without a great economic or even agronomic yield penalty to. And it's in a corn study here, so we wouldn't want to negatively impact corn yield. And all sites, all five locations in a corn soy rotation, our rates range from 0 to 225 kilograms. And this is urea pre-plant broadcast, and we had four locations on farm, and then one at the Kellogg Biological Research Station. And we were able to work with growers to help us plant and manage those sites so that we'd kind of reflect the grower management systems here. The nitrous oxide was monitored throughout the growing season, and it's pretty typical static chamber method here. And I'm going to go ahead and move through this. We spent a lot of time on regression on an individual site level, but we also wanted to describe the overall response across all sites. And typically, people kind of assume either a linear response or a nonlinear response, and this is especially true of the modeling community, without testing the relationship. It's a large assumption. So what we did is we wanted to compare several different response curves before we went into a statistical package to test them. And we used table curve to kind of generate some idea, and it seemed that linear response and exponential response describe sites pretty well. And then we jumped into experiment-wide comparisons. Now, this is the data set, and this is an average daily flux measurement on all our plots. And on the lower graph is a relative scale scaled to the highest flux plot within a site, so we still maintain a randomized complete block design. And you can see that with increasing nitrogen rate, we have this large variability out on the high end. So there's, you know, we have a kind of similar background at zero, but then with increasing rate, things really change. So we use a randomized complete block design with a random coefficient model to maintain our statistical design. And we're able to maintain the different site responses with regards to nitrous oxide. And we modeled both the observed flux and then the relative scale too. And we had kind of a poor estimate at the high end, so we see that large confidence interval band. And the upper graph is the observed model for the average daily flux and the relative in the bottom. But the important thing here is that in both cases, a nonlinear response best described all sites. the relative flux and the relative scaling seemed to linearize the data a little bit, so we didn't have as good of a fit for the exponential, but still preferred. And here we're going to try to drive it home here with making an estimate on an annual flux basis. And the white bars is the IPCC estimate of that 1% emission factor to the background. The scale is a annual flux. And you can see that the blue bar and the black bars are our data set. So black bar is just a raw value from the averages. The blue bar is the model. You can see that the IPCC estimate would have underestimated those fluxes. And then continuing with generating an emission factor, so that's that fertilizer-induced emissions. You can see, again, IPCC estimates would be flat, and then observed models increasing. And so we're kind of running a little bit short on time, so I'm going to rush through the MRTN approach. And Neville's actually going to cover a little bit about kind of the Iowa corn calculator. But our average yield response in our MRTN, looking at 2007 to 2008, we had an average yield response of 8.5. And that nitrogen rate would have correlated to 154 kilograms to the hectare N, plus or minus 20. So a little bit wider range than what you might find if you calculate it on the Iowa Corn Calculator site. And that yield impact of, say, making a reduction, in the red is that range, MRTN range, but making a reduction from 173 kilograms to maybe back it down to 135 would have correlated to a yield impact of 0.2 megagrams. Now, that occurs in and around here where we know that nonlinear trend really starts to increase. So backing off from 225 to say 135 would have correlated to about 5 kilograms of N, nitrous oxide N, or 114% reduction, and to a lesser extent for a 180 reduction. So pretty big reductions in nitrous oxide. So again, the nonlinear response was best described at all sites. And we saw this from a general trend that it described on an individual site basis as well, that nonlinear trend was preferred or better fit. So reducing those N rates might be possible to maintain yield as well with making significant reductions in nitrous oxide. And Neville's going to talk a lot about kind of bringing this back home within a Tier 2 approach, so I don't want to steal his thunder, and I'd like to take any questions if there's time. Sorry to run off, cut it close here.
There is time for one question.
Forms the N in the soil?
Well, I mean, like, why not linear N2O emission with the higher rate?
Yeah, I think it has a lot to do with crop demand.
No, but because you have nitrate that denitrify, and then you measure later in the season, or before, I mean, what the crop was taking ammonia, and it was not mineralized and producing N2O. What do you think?
We see a lot of N2O released early on in the season prior to that large increase and crop in demand. So maybe early on in the season that urea is getting mineralized and then denitrified while we have wet soils early on in the season. It's just
was all the nitrogen applied in a single application?
It was. So everything's pre-plant broadcast at all sites and incorporated. Yes. So
would that single higher rate then possibly contribute to greater percent emission?
Yeah, some people have looked at that, and I put the four R's up there because some people have kind of hoped that maybe timing or placement might be able to help address that, but it just hasn't been consistent. And in those types of studies, what people often will see is that it'll be a lower rate of flux, but it will be throughout the season. So you still, in a cumulative emissions, you still accumulate that nitrous oxide.
But what we have done with controlled release fertilizer, and then you could put the same, and it would be much lower.
Yes, the controlled release data is kind of, some people have found that they can make reductions with a source.
It's published in the paper.
Oh, sure. But there's also been contrasting studies as well, so
with controlled release?
So what type of control release fertilizer, like a
polyolefin powder, urea?
Right. So yeah, I think the literature is starting to grow on control release. Certainly, there's been a lot of prospects with like an ESN product. In some environments, has shown that you can, again, and not only reduce that end rate, but then also control that release, so the timing event in the soil too. So there's definitely potential.
Well, there will be a little bit of time for more questions later in the session if you have other questions. Thank you.